you know, we're the ones that keep it wicked. Rock and roll, all good, mix it up, that's my ticket. Cruising in my Cadillac Escalade.
Good evening and welcome to episode 45 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Erin Campbell. Tonight is a show where I am making some history. Not only is this the first time where I have had to have my guest record the show for me, but this is also the first time that I have ever had a fellow ginger on the show. With me tonight is Houston Whitehead, host of the Tap and Sack podcast. Hello.
How's it going?
Hi, thank you so much for recording my show for me.
No problem. You picked a good guest to have, that's for sure.
It's funny because at the end of the season, I always break my show up into seasons, and I always talk about like some behind-the-scenes tidbits and things that have happened, and I'm used to guests having technical difficulties, and I'm used to sort of joking about how many times they have to call me back and how many microphones they go through, and, you know, 45 episodes into my show, and I am on the other side of the coin for once. It's a little embarrassing.
Oh, it's good. That'd be some fun like stats to keep up with. Like, right? You get to, like, episode 100, and you have the stats of, like, how many microphones used and, like, how many callbacks. That'd be kind of cool. Or if you had, like, your own record book. Like,
yeah.
Since I already have two titles so far, so, like, eventually I'm just going to get my own chapter in the Deck Tees world record book.
It's funny, because I used to play World of Warcraft, and they used to keep track of really mundane things like that. So it would be like, you know, number of times, you know, fallen to your death, or number of times you've hugged an NPC, and yeah, I'll have to do something similar. Number of times I've made a guest uncomfortable.
Like, oh, that'd be a good stat.
Right? So just to recap, so your name really is Houston Whitehead, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, because the first time I saw your name, I immediately thought of, like, some old Southern aristocrat, like, sitting on a plantation, you know, drinking juleps and yelling at the coloreds to get off his lawn.
You're the first person that's, like, got that image from my name. It usually goes instantly to Texas, so they think I'm, like, I ride horses or I have a collection of cowboy hats. Or they think I'm an astronaut and they say, Houston, we have a problem, and think that they're the first person on God-given Earth that said it. And so now I'm to the point where I'm just like, yeah, you're the first person to say that. And they're like, really? And I'm like, no. Or I'll just keep going with it, and some people still think they're the first person.
Well, it's kind of like this. I mean, you can relate to being a ginger. You know, we've heard all the jokes. We've heard all the stereotypes. And it's sort of the same where people think that they're the first to ever tell you something. Or, you know, I tend to hear a lot of the – I remember going through grade school and through – or even through middle school, actually, and through grades 6 through 8, there was one guy who was convinced that my name was Jessica. And I was like, why are you calling me Jessica? And it's like, because you look like my friend's sister. And I was like, really? What do we look like? And he's like, you both have red hair. And that was the only thing we had in common. And I've heard that a lot, too. And people always act like it's the first time you've ever heard that. Like, has anyone ever told you like this person? And I'm like, no. Like, I'm convinced that people think, like, all of us gingers just crawled out of a spawning pool at, like, the start of time. And
or all have the same mother and father.
Yeah.
Every time I'm, like, with a friend that also has the same color hair as me, they assume that we're siblings.
Yeah, and that makes dating other gingers really awkward, because I've met some really cute ginger boys, and I've only ever been with one ginger my whole life, and we didn't go all the way. We made out at a Paul Oakenfold concert, and he gave me a hickey on my back.
That sounds really awkward, actually. Sounds like an awful date.
Well, it was a great time, but
I'm not into back hickeys, but if you are, go for it.
Well, I'm just saying, that's something that's prevented me from dating other gingers, is like you said, people assume you're related. So I thought it was the back hickey
that prevented you from dating other gingers.
Well, I would hate to meet a really cute ginger, and all of a sudden we're holding hands in public, and people are like, are you holding hands with your brother? And I'm like, you know, there'd be that little part of me that would want to be like, yes, and just give him a big wet one. And
yeah.
Freak him out.
Just make the person that said it feel as awkward and uncomfortable as possible.
That's what I live for.
Yeah, and that's kind of like why I've created the persona of ginger ale. It's just I can just constantly make fun of myself with everybody else.
Yeah.
It's just constant ginger jokes, and what it's just embracing it to the point where people don't say this ginger joke or ask this ginger question. Like, I've already said everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it kind of pushes all that stuff out of the way, at least on the internet.
I think it's also really important to be able to laugh at yourself, because I do feel like in podcasting and in blogging, especially once you get bigger, I feel like people tend to take themselves very seriously. And I've always had a laugh at my image. I love, you know, being flirty and fun and scandalous or whatever. And I think if you can laugh at yourself, it sort of takes away the power from other people. You know, they don't have that power over you anymore.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
So as I said earlier in the show, the way that I found you, Houston, is you have a show called Tap and Sack, and I admit that I don't listen to very many podcasts, which sounds kind of hypocritical because I have a podcast. But I just don't, and I just started listening to them at work, and yours is one of the shows that I really enjoy, and I've enjoyed your persona on Twitter. I like some of the things you have to say, and I wanted you on my show to talk about those things a little bit, because I feel like your show doesn't quite have a lot of attention, so I'm hoping I can maybe turn the spotlight on you a little bit. And maybe get people to enjoy your show the way that I do.
Well, I appreciate it. First of all, thank you so much for lending us your ears.
Yeah.
All the support. I think I say it every show. I just encourage interaction. Like, we're not just here to just educate, which is a big reason of, like, why we have this show now or what it's evolved to. But it's to stir up communication in the community. Mm-hmm. And I want you to talk to me. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not this persona you can't touch. I want to have a voice. I want to have a strong voice, but I also like want to talk magic with you. Like, and it's not in all podcasts, but it seems like some fans put the hosts on a pedestal where they don't want to be on one, or I don't want to be on one, because I'm just like you. I just decided to get a microphone and a recording program and do this once a week, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let's talk about Tap and Sack a little bit. So I was doing a little bit of research on the show, because you also maintain a blog to go along with the show, and you had recently celebrated, I believe, your one-year anniversary doing the show?
It's somewhere around there. I'm not really sure exactly where it hits, because we've had, like, 8 lost episodes and skipped 3 weeks, and I'm not really sure when I'm supposed to celebrate it at. But yeah, somewhere around there.
Right, and you had basically talked about how the show had had a bit of a rocky start. So why don't you tell me about how Tap and Sack got started and some of the hurdles that you faced along the way to get here?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was basically me and my buddies, Alex and Chris. Well, it was just me and Chris in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And we're just sitting in the shop, shooting shit, talking magic. And I was like, we can just sit here and talk forever. And he'll just come over to my house, we'll drink beer and just talk magic and brew. And I'm just like, you know, I've been listening to, I actually listened to Yo MTG Taps, Monday Night Magic, and A-Team. He got me onto the A-Team. So I was like, dude, shit, we can do this. He's like, dude, let's do it, you know. And so Alex is another one of my close buddies, and I was like, he just eventually started coming on to the point where he was a co-host. But so I actually recorded the first 20 so episodes within you ever played Rock Band?
I have,
or
yeah.
Guitar Hero?
Yeah.
Okay, you know those microphones that come with like Rock Band 5? I'm not shitting you. I used that for at least probably 20 plus episodes, probably close to the 30 mark.
Wow.
Yeah, it was in the 20s somewhere. I used a Guitar Hero microphone to record my audio. It was absolutely awful. The first 5 episodes are like almost listenable. Like you just turn on like a couple minutes and you're like, all right, I can't take this. There's like buzzings in the background. My fan would get picked up on the microphone all the time, and I didn't know how to take it off. So basically, we just started, and I was like, all right, guys, let's just network, get on the social networks or whatever. And they did not, and I did, and I started editing, and I just taught myself like what we needed to do, how to edit the stuff. I looked up to this podcast that I listened to try to make some sort of format. But it was basically just drink beer and talk magic, which has been the motto since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the people will enjoy what we have to say, and if not, whatever. So I didn't know any networks to like put the data on. I tried to do it on a blog, and you have to get like data packages and stuff like that. So it was actually, I started a YouTube account, and if you have a YouTube account, when you start, you can't go over 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I had to chop it into blocks, of 9 minutes and 59 seconds. So these are like 2 hour podcasts. I'm chopping into these pieces. I have to upload each of them into Windows Media Player. Mm-hmm. And I had, a little graphic that I made, and I had to stretch it along that 9 minutes and 59 seconds.
So let me make sure I have this right. So you were uploading the podcast to YouTube because you weren't sure how to upload the audio to a blog, or you weren't sure how to get the hosting for it?
Well, I mean, I didn't know of like a SoundCloud type of service.
Sure.
I was trying to get on a blog to make some sort of web page, but we don't have any money.
Right.
I mean, everything we did was free. Mm-hmm. I got on like WordPress, and you have to buy a data package to like upload certain amounts, you know, big amounts of megabyte and mm-hmm. these big files. You have to pay, and we just couldn't. So we're trying to find this free alternative, and we didn't know any. We were asking people on Facebook. So this was just what I came up with. And he's like, that's fine. So I just made this playlist. I put it all together. It took like 2 days to just post one and edit and post one. It was ridiculous. So, you know, our friends and family are like listening in or whatever. Well, not really our family. They don't really want to listen to it. But our friends at the shop started listening. So we were getting like 20, 25 hits or whatever. So eventually I found Posterous, which is a free blog, which is shut down now, which I can shoot my RSS feed through to get on iTunes. So I had it on iTunes for a while until Posterous shut down. And we eventually got on MTGcast. What kept us from getting on it in the beginning was in their description of, like, before you submit a show, they talked about, like, content being clean. And we were not that at all. Not at all.
I learned that the hard way when I was on Monday Night Magic and I swore twice and it was like the scandal of the day. Like I was getting the most irate tweets from people I didn't even know. And they were acting like I ran over somebody's dog. And I was just like, really? And what I found so hypocritical about that in a way was if you catch those guys when the mic is off, they were dirtier than I was. And I loved that about them. And that made me want to be on the show, was I really thought we were all just going to, you know, get wild with it. And then, like, when the mic went on, I was suddenly the bad girl. And I was like, I wasn't expecting them to be as family friendly as they are attempting to be.
Yeah. We got on. I just finally got up the courage because I was very scared of it because I didn't want to go on and then be like, you're too explicit. We won't want to have you. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that rejection, especially this being so new, and like I understand that I'm not doing everything right. I'm just doing the best I can and learning from every mistake that comes up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we got on there and it was fine. And we got a couple emails like, could you tone it down some of the stuff? And I was like, well, like, what is it specifically? I think Chris was saying like retarded a lot. So they just asked us to tone it down. And I was like, I can understand some of the slurs, the racial or derogatory. Wow. There's some that I'm okay with because, I mean, when they get drunk, sometimes we just, you know, go a little bit too far. But, so I can understand. We wanted to professionalize it just a little bit, but still keep that same wild, raw aspect. But I just emailed, I think it was, it wasn't Chewy.
Well, there's Chewy, Tom, and then there's Chris. But don't ask me because I've had problems with even emailing them. So.
No, yeah, it was Chris that sent it to me. So I sent it back, and I didn't get anything back. So I talked to Chewy, and I said, hey, you know, I'm really sorry about, like, I know you guys have an image, blah, blah, blah. Or you have these standards on your website. It's cool. But I just can't change the show. I'm not. Like, this is what it's built on. This is what we created it to do. It's supposed to be raw. If we took that out, we'd be shit. Mm-hmm. Shittier. But, like, this is us. We're being ourselves. And he's like, don't worry about it. He's like, just keep doing what you're doing. Like, you're getting hits, so like, keep it up. So we did that, and then eventually Chris and Alex decided to get out of the game. So
you're talking like the game of Magic or the podcasting game?
The game of Magic.
Okay.
Which audibles to not podcasting. which kind of broke my heart in a way because I thought the show was done. And I just asked around to some friends and I said, hey, does anybody want to be on and just kind of try out and just hang out? I want to try to keep this going. So I hit up Matt and Jay. They jumped on. We had some awkwardness at the beginning, of course, because you're not used to casting with each other. But It changed in a way of a little bit more mature than what it was. It got a little bit more professional. And then Jay's decided to pursue a comedy career, so it's pretty much me and Matt now, and we're kind of looking for a third co-host. But as it's evolved, it's definitely matured out in a really weird way. It's kind of like I started out very raw and very young in the game. I've only been playing 2 years. And as I've matured, the podcast has also matured with me. So it's kind of a cool thing, which I'm actually going to be writing an article, I guess, next week or so, about the evolution of the cast and how it's changed and how I need to embrace it instead of trying to hold on to, like, where we started at. Because the people have changed and our personalities and the way we play Magic has changed. So hopefully the people that have been following us from the beginning will understand and accept that evolution.
You've mentioned that you are under the MTG Cast banner, and MTG Cast has been getting a lot of attention lately because they've decided to accept advertising money from people and have started putting recorded advertisements on the beginning of all their shows. And there were quite a few people that were not happy about this, and there were people who – it was a very polarizing topic for a little while. You being under their umbrella, how did you feel about all of that when you noticed that that was happening?
I am 100% for it. I'm okay with it. I interact with – I talk to Chewy every now and then. I try to make it weekly, but it doesn't always end up doing that. He's a very busy man, and I know that everyone at MTG Cast works very hard, and I know that they've always been searching for sponsors and income to keep it up, because they do a lot for us for free. Chewy works ridiculous amounts of hours, and I just use him as an example because that's who I talk to. I'm sure the other ones do a lot of work without pay as well, but he puts a lot of work in and gets no pay. So if there's anything they could even start to do that or keep the site alive, I'm for that. I am glad that it's in the beginning and not like in the middle it's a fair spot. We talked about it last night on our cast of like people being used to commercial breaks. So they could easily just put these like four advertisements in the middle of people's casts. But the fact that it's the beginning is good, because I know some listeners skip your intro. Some people, like, if you have the same intro, some people are like, all right, I've listened to your intro 500 times. I'm just going to skip it. And that's fine. It's not a big deal. But it's kind of in the same spot where, you know, if they've heard that same advertisement 500 times, they can just skip it along with the intro. I'm not encouraging people to skip it. I know it's there for a reason, but... like, if the person's skipping it, they've probably already heard it, to be fair. But I hope that it brings in more. I'm okay with it. At the same time, I do understand that some casts have some heavy supporters and are more dominant on other websites or more supported on other websites. And I know that can cause some frictions with sponsors or what's said before your cast or that advertisement and then your sponsors that you say, you know, Your main sponsor wasn't said first. The MTG Cast one was. Like, I know there's like some silly tidbits that people are really ruffle their feathers about, but I think it's good. I think it's a good evolution, like we just talked about.
Now, I have to ask, though, because like I said, there was a lot of talk being thrown around, and of course, being Twitter and being the internet, you really don't know what to believe or what's what. So were you guys told in advance this was going to happen? Did you have any kind of notice, or was it literally where a listener emailed you and said, did you know you got this ad going, or did you find out when you were listening to the shows? I know a lot of us listen to our shows to make sure it turned out well. How did you know that this was happening?
Well, I did check out the episode and heard the ad, and I was about to email someone, but I don't check the Tap and Sack email as often as I usually do. A lot of people that interact and send me emails, it's just to my personal one is usually where it goes.
Okay.
So I checked, and I was like, you know, before I email them, I'm going to check the Tap and Sack. So I did have an email. It was, I do wish that it was before the date that, I don't even remember the exact date, but I do wish it was more in advance to say, hey, upcoming here soon, within the next month, we are going to blah, 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 blah. It was more like, hey, next week we're going to do this. And I was like, whoa, you know. So there, it would have been nice if there was a little bit of a gap for interaction or communication.
Yeah.
You know, a time to react to it instead of like, whoa, you know, our episode's already up with this ad on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do wish it was a little bit more in advance, but I wasn't bitter about it.
Now, you've also mentioned, and I discovered this when I was researching the show a little bit, Houston, you're maintaining a podcast at the same time that you're maintaining a blog associated with that podcast. I know when I first started my show, I was blogging for 60 Cards to sort of get my name out there a little bit and just to get people to know who I am and know who the show was. And one of the things that I found really difficult was trying to figure out what should go on a blog and what I should say for the podcast. How do you decide what goes where? And have you had a problem kind of balancing the two out? Because after a while, I couldn't blog anymore because I felt like everything was going on the show. How have you dealt with that?
Well, I'll start by saying I took a college course, writing and digital media, and we talked about blogging. We talked about a lot of things. I did like site reviews. A couple of those assignments that I had were on there, and we were required to start this blog to do your class assignments. And after I started one in there, I said, hey, you know, there's some things that I don't bring up in the cast. There's some other things that I'm passionate about. I can associate that in my own blog. And if people want to know more from me, then they can go to this blog. Mm-hmm. And then if they enjoy my following, or I can connect with people in different ways, then if they enjoy my content, they may enjoy the podcast that I've created. So I was kind of creating it to link, not necessarily go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. As one unit, if that makes sense. Like,
it does.
I did it more for me, but I'm so invested in the podcast, it's practically the podcast blog. But at the same time, I do write some personal entries, and it is mine. But I also have a passion for like finance and magic, and we're not a financial podcast. That's just as an example. And so a lot of times we discuss just the value of a card and like playability. And if that card price fits its playability, that's what we mainly focus on. But there's a lot of other factors that fluctuate those prices, and not just like Star City, like hiking the shit out of a price. There's, there's other things like demand or how much this set has been printed or how many packs have been opened on Modo. That's a different, financial area, but there's a lot of stuff that I'm really interested in and I like talking about, but it's something that could just take up a whole cast of me talking about it. So I just decided to write about stuff like that or personal experiences. Like I wrote an article, just like a breakdown of going to SCG Nashville, and it was more of my emotional adventure in that tournament. It wasn't necessarily just a breakdown of the matchups or whatever. It was my personal experience, more of an internal view of that. And then, you know, I'm on the podcast and I just kind of mention it, you know, I give some highlights because at the same time, you know, I could talk a whole podcast about that day.
Something else I found really interesting when I was looking at your blog and even your Facebook, because you link your Facebook in each episode, is you're very open about your political and your religious beliefs, which is something that podcasters and bloggers sometimes won't go near because they're worried about alienating their audience, you know, if their views don't fall in line or things like that. And there was a political post on your blog, and it didn't seem to have a lot to do with magic, so it did seem very awkward. And then you were very open about certain beliefs on your Facebook as well. Have you given any thought to that? Have you given any thought to maybe wanting to keep those things more private, or, you know, have you thought about what would happen, you know, if people decide they don't want to check out the podcast because of how you feel spiritually or how you feel politically? You know, have you thought about that at all?
I will say when I posted those things and I offered those links, it was not something that I really kept in mind. Mm-hmm. Because I never really thought I would actually have a voice. I thought we were just going to kind of just do this and a couple of people would know us and whatever. I didn't think there would be any sort of following. So with that mindset, it didn't really matter to me. But why A better question would be why I didn't take it down or why I didn't start managing it. I kind of mentioned earlier about people being able to connect with me and how I don't want to be put on a pedestal and I'm just another player. Mm-hmm. I want to keep that aspect because I think if I'm being real and make things more personal and I'm a little more open, then people can connect with me in other ways besides Magic. And know that I'm being real, that I'm not putting on this facade on my podcast or my blog. Another thing is my blog started out just me. I was just going to do me posts about philosophy and some finance stuff. And then there's a political every now and then or religious every now and then. It was just going to be that. And it's just evolved into Magic articles. Mm-hmm. But like some people will come up to you and disagree with what your beliefs are, and that's fine, and I'm okay with people disagree with my beliefs, but I'm very open about them and I don't attack them. So just knowing that that we can accept each other, that we can still be friends.
Yeah, I've certainly encountered that with people, especially with my Twitter feeds. My Twitter is very uncensored, and I do tweet a lot. And it's interesting, as you mentioned, you know, people putting a host or a show on a pedestal, and I've felt like that quite a bit. And I've noticed that people assume that because you podcast about a hobby or you blog about a hobby, that that's all you're ever going to have to talk about. And I've had a lot of things going on in my personal life lately that has bled into my Twitter account. And for the most part, people have been very happy about it. But, you know, I can imagine that there are some people that are like, well, I'm not following you for this reason. Why are you talking about this? And it's strange that that's even a thing. Because I can't ever say that I followed somebody just for their Magic output. I followed people because they happen to play Magic and they're really cool and they say funny things once in a while. And I don't understand the expectation of people to be one-sided. So I can relate to what you're saying about being open and being honest and being yourself, because I feel like people, they only want to see one side of you. And God forbid you should happen to have any other aspects to you. They just don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah, if you just like me on the cast, then just listen to the cast. That's mm-hmm. fine. Yeah. If you don't want to know anything else about me, or you figured out, hey, this guy believes in God and I don't, and I hate him for it. I mean, that's fine. If you believe that, that's cool. But, I mean, you probably don't really want to interact with me and bring that up and attack me about it. That's just stupid. Or, but if you want to communicate, like, if you're an atheist, that's cool. Like, not a big deal. That's not going to be everything we talk about. We're mm-hmm. human beings. We have a life. That's not the only thing I think about every day of my life, you know? So if you can get past that, then you can get to know me. It's cool. And if you don't want to do that, then just listen to the cast or don't listen at all. Like, I want people to listen. I think that we discuss things that are worth saying. But if you disagree, then it's an option. You have to hit the play button. You know, I'm not making you.
Right.
But.
So a big milestone for your show is you recently had Craig Wescal on, and he famously just won Pro Tour Dragon's Maze. What was that like? How'd you get him on the show? Did he live up to your expectations? Tell me about that.
Well, Ryan and Matt, I'm sorry, that were on the show with me. Matt's my co-host. Both grew up with Wesco. And Wesco is also from my hometown. Well, he's from Knoxville. I live in Maryville, which is just like 25 minutes away. But it's in East Tennessee. And that's where he grew up. And there's a very strong Magic community in Knoxville. So they grew up playing Magic with him. And I've just kind of known him through them. Just behind them in a way, I guess. Like, I've never met him. But Ryan... Or Matt mentioned that, you know, Craig may want to be on the show, you know, and I was like, yeah, I read his articles all the time. I was like, yeah, just get him on here. So I was like, cool. And then he wins the Pro Tour, and I was like, Matt, fucking pick up your phone right now and call Craig Wesco. He's going to get on next week. And he's like, all right, I'm already on it. Like, I was like, you need to fast track him up at least 2 weeks. So he couldn't that weekend, but we got him on the next, which was good, because he was eventually going to be on. But It was great. He's a pretty reserved guy. After the episode concluded, I guess it's a little behind the scenes bonus footage I'm exposing here on Deck Tease. They tell me he was, you know, he's a very, very reserved guy, and if he wasn't enjoying himself, he wouldn't initiate and continue conversations. He would give short answers, and he, mm-hmm. if you listen to the episode, he talks quite a bit.
Yeah.
So he's like, if you just take one thing away, take away that he definitely enjoyed himself. So that was good. That's what I was worried about the most, because I know those guys, they have a lot of inside jokes, which I actually had to cut out about 10 minutes of inside jokes that they just kind of brought up on the fly that people just wouldn't get, and I cut some of that stuff out. But I was worried that I would feel a disconnect to him, that they had this connection, and I'm the one interviewing him, and I just thought it could get really awkward or weird. But it went really smooth. I was very happy with it, and he had a good time, and we'll probably have him on again. But he has a lot of knowledge. I mean, clearly, with his achievements and his writing abilities, but it was great to just sit down and hang out and pick his brain for like 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I don't know if people get like excited or squirrely around well-known Magic players. Do you?
I clean out so hard. I've gotten a lot better, but when I first started doing this show, I was a big old, like, I would ramble, and I would, you know, and yeah. I was a big old mess. And even now, it's like, you know, when I had Kibler on my show, it was a big deal. And I definitely yeah. did play it cool, but there was definitely a day or two where it's just like, you know, like, oh my God, Kibler was on my show. It's like, no way. And yeah, I still have those moments. And I think it's important to not lose those moments. I think, because when you're in the game for a while, when you're in the podcasting game for a while, or the blogging game, you do get kind of numb to that sort of thing. And you do lose that. And I encountered that even when I was blogging. Like when I was a wild blogger, I started, you know, commiserating with people who were really big names. And when people would see that I was talking to them, they'd be like, oh my God, that's so-and-so. And I'd be like, yeah, we're cash, we're love, no big deal.
Yeah.
And people were like, you know, and I missed that. I missed that feeling. And now it's like, you know, I never want to lose that, where, you know, I may raise the bar a little bit, where, you know, Conley and Brian may not make me squeal and freak out and pull out my hair, but, you know, now somebody like, I don't know, you know, Tom Martell might, or Aaron Forsythe might, or Elaine Bergio might. You know, it just might mean that there's still a squeal factor there. It just takes a little more to do it. But I never want to stop feeling that, you know.
Oh, that's fair. I'm kind of on a different side of it. To me, when I started, I looked up to them because they're way fucking better than me. But, I mean, besides that, I in no way do I think that I'm better than them now. It's just the point where I've come to the realization that they're just people. and they're just dudes just like me. So when I came to that realization, I don't know when the moment was. I didn't have this eureka moment where I was like scrubbing in the shower and it just happened. This light bulb came on.
Yeah, so I understand what that's like. And I know something I've always worried about, too, is whether or not – I have had certain people express interest in coming on my show. And I hate to say it, but I worry that the personality isn't there, or I worry that we're not going to have anything to talk about. For example, I was at the WMCQ the other day, the weekend or two ago, and Caleb Durward was there. He's a big Channel Fireball guy. He's been running with Jun lately. Really, mm-hmm. really nice guy. Didn't say much to me. Like, I kept trying to, like, initiate conversation with them and be like, Caleb, big fan of Jun, you know, go you, love the blog. And I would just get this, thanks.
That's like, yeah.
Okay. And that doesn't make him a bad guy, but he's just kind of yeah. quiet, or maybe he was really focused or whatever. So I remember spending a couple minutes, like, trying to pull tea to get conversation out of him. And at that point, I just walk away. I don't even say goodbye. I'm like, okay, I'm done. And as I'm walking away, he genuinely looks at me and he goes, let me know if you need someone for your show. And I'm like, wait. I was like, I could not get you to say a full sentence to me for a good 15 minutes. And then as I'm walking away, you want to be on my show.
He's a nice guy.
He could be, and he's a nice guy, and Lord knows we have mutual friends, we have mutual Facebook friends, he has a large following. He's not a bad person, but I'm just like, what? If I have you on my show, are you going to talk? Like, you know, and I do worry about that. And then when Melissa DeTora did her thing and she was, you know, one of the first woman to top eight, you know, a pro tour, same thing. People were like, you've got to have Melissa on your show. That will be awesome. And Melissa is game face all the time. She never loses that persona, that stone cold. And again, it was the same thing. It was like, I would love to have her on my show and I would love to pick her brain, but is she going to talk to me? Is she going to have the personality where we can banter together? And unfortunately, there are just some people where you're not going to have that. And I think a lot of people just assume that because they're really, really good, that that's going to translate into being a good podcast guest. Oh, and that's not always the
definitely
case.
Definitely not. Yeah. I think you have more on the line than we do because we have two or three people and then a guest. So if we need to, we can just drown them out or I can just cut crap out of the episode.
Yeah.
You know, and no one will really know. I mean, not that I've did that a lot. But, I mean, we've had guests on that are just like
– you got to work for it. Yeah.
Not helpful. Or they just say stupid shit for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. Like, there's one thing with having an opinion, but if you can't back it up, like – you need to hear. You need to on the show. You need to validate it some kind. You can't just say shit. And sometimes they just do, and it takes a long time for me, or it takes a lot of resistance for me to not rip them apart. Like, this didn't work. And then sometimes we've had very strong personalities that just take over the show. Like, TSG, well, this isn't necessarily bad, but, like, there's a couple points you'll see in the new episode with TSG's on, he just takes over. Mm-hmm. He asked me like three questions. Mm-hmm. For a moment, I was like, wait, whose show is this? No, not that I have to say the questions.
Right.
I just usually say the questions. And when you ask me or you bring up a topic, there's one topic in the episode that wasn't on the show notes that he just brought up. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, whoa. Like, I don't have notes for this. Like, I have an opinion, but it's not thought out. I'm not as on the fly as we used to be able to do. Like, we have to have these valid points behind it. And even though I have an opinion, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't have like 15 valid points to like bring up.
I don't think I've ever had anybody say anything stupid on the show. If anything, though, my show does attract a lot of first-timers who've never been on a podcast before. So if anything, it's a matter of they're not sure when to jump in because they're afraid they're going to talk over me, or they're just sort of shy people to begin with, or they're nervous or things like that. So I can honestly say wholeheartedly I've never had anybody – you know, say things that I've cringed at or anything like that. It's mostly just been like, come on, you could – come on. It's your cue. It's like a game of double dutch. You know, they're sort of waiting for their turn to jump in. And I think it's cute. I actually prefer having people who were, you know, where it's their first time on a show. I think that's a lot more enjoyable to me. That's me personally.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's a weird thing to learn. Like, I still haven't learned it, when to jump in. It's something as a cast that you just develop – after casting together, you'll just kind of know when people are done by how they talk, just the tone of their voice or the way that they're ending a sentence. You know that they're done with their thought,
right.
And you're gonna have some moments with like guests where you can't know when they're gonna stop. So there's that. But I try really hard not to interrupt people because that's probably like my biggest fault, but I hate dead silence. Even though I know I can edit out silence, and it's a lot easier to edit out silence than it is to edit out an but there's just something in my head. I guess it's because I've did radio that I don't want silence ever. Mm-hmm. So
enough about podcasting. Let's talk about the game that we know and love. You're a standard player, correct, Houston?
Yes. That's okay, probably my dominance.
All right, so what are you playing right now?
I'm playing junk. I call it value junk. Well, it's nicknamed Craigslist for all its value.
Okay, go it's, on.
The best way I could just describe it in a synopsis is like Selesnya ramp mixed with half Selesnya ramp and half Reanimator.
Okay.
It has the rights package and Angel of Serenity, and then it also has the low end of like Farseek with Absence Pilgrim and Loxodon Smiter. And it has, you know, the standard Restoration Angel and Thraxtusk, but what really pulls it away is I run Disciple of Bolas. So if you don't know what the card is, I don't know if you do or if people that are listening know, because it's not that popular of a card. It's a black and three, and when it comes into play, it's a 2/1. You sacrifice a creature, and you draw cards and gain life according to that sacrificed creature's power. So the only reason I really have Thraxtusk in the deck is for Disciple of Bolas, and I mean Restoration Angel helps, but it's in to gain five when he comes in, and then I sack him away, get a 3/3, draw five, gain five. And basically the deck, I just want to grind and trade creatures and permanents with you, and then I Disciple of Bolas or Angel of Serenity and get to the point where I have more cards in my hand than you do, and then I just win. It's kind of a weird game plan, but...
How has the deck been doing for you? Like, have you been at any events recently? How have you been holding up against the current crop of decks?
Consistently first or second at FNM, but it's not really a higher status. I went to SCG Nashville and went 6-2, 6-3-1. I drew my last round, which kind of sucked. But it's in the article if you want to check out the blog or whatever. It's a long article breakdown about like all the stuff that happened. But basically, I got to a draw and I was like, I know my tiebreakers are good. And he was like, well, I think mine are too. And I was like, well, there's like five judges around, so I was like, well, like, I will you concede to me? Like, will you scoop to me? Like. He was a part of a team, and I knew the other people on the team. Like, I would buy him dinner or something after, you know? Like, it's not... But you can't say stuff like that in a tournament, but you can't offer that kind of split.
Right.
I mean, it's completely illegal. And I'm not trying to just get around it. It's just like, hey, you know... If we meet again in a tournament, I'll scoop to you. But I can't just say that. I can't make a deal. So I'm kind of like, hey, you know, do that thing, you know? And he wouldn't. And he's like, I'll just take the draw and take my chances. So it paid out to 64th, and I got 68th, and he got 69th. So that was kind of rough. But it did really well. It has a lot of good matchups. I guess the hardest matchup is... on the draw against Acidic Slime Reanimator is really tough, but what deck does well against that anyway?
Yeah, so let's talk about the current crop of decks. I actually sent you a link with the current popular decks in the metagame right now, and I understand that the link I sent you is mostly revolving around the online metagame, but I do feel that it's fairly accurate for the paper one as well. So it looks like at the top of the list, Aggro is back. We're not really looking so much at Naya Aggro anymore. We've really boiled down to more Gruul Aggro. That seems to be the big thing right now. Aggro's pretty gross. I know I struggle with aggro a little bit, and I think the reason I get really angry when I play aggro decks because I feel like it comes down to luck more than anything, where when you get those decks that are like Burning Tremissary, yeah. What can you do against that? Even the best decks out there, you have nothing against that. If they get that draw, you're done. And nothing makes me tilt more than a feeling of helplessness. And I feel like those decks alone... Same thing when Mono Red was big, where it was like, okay, turn one Stromkirk Noble, turn two Ash Zealot, turn three Lightning Mauler plus a Cackler, turn four Hellrider, game. What do I have against that? You know, and those decks tend to really frustrate me. Why do you think that aggro is suddenly on top again?
Just in this meta, or just as a whole of aggro, because Zach Hill has been
either or
pushing creatures so fucking hard to where like aggro just plays creatures. When I started playing the game, I played with Goblin Guide, Shrine of Burning Rage, Quest of the Pure Heart, which are like that's an enchantment, an artifact, and a creature, and there was just like burn spells and a couple creatures. Like, it was more Burny, and like there's a lot, it was less linear, or it felt less linear to play, and now they're just these creature beat your face. It's like rolling dice. So I feel like aggro now is whoever wins the die roll wins, like, because if aggro wins and they get to play first, even if they go to six, like, they probably, the decks are some consistent enough to probably beat you on turn three or four with the creature pool that they have.
They don't even use spells anymore. I think the most those decks use is like, for a while it was just Force Earring Spear. That's all you needed. Like you could
Gore Clan Rampager.
Yeah, that's
you could a spell.
You could wipe the whole board. You know, like I remember for a while I was doing a Conley's Pro Tour deck from Gatecrash. So I would do a turn four Mutilate, which is hot. I'd wipe the board, and then they would just top deck shit. And it was just like, did I not just wipe your board? Like, what happened here? Like, you know, it's very easy for them to recover and just do it all again. And
currently, Standard has about 15,000 haste creatures. So the fact that we have Shocklands, and you can put all of them in the same deck, so your one drops don't have haste, and then everything after does.
Right, and then you also have to figure, with the dependence on Shocklands, it affects how you play against those aggro decks, because if you're already taking so much damage per turn against red deck wins or against Gruul aggro, you can't really afford even that two life, so that kind of puts a damper on you too, because you're getting all these lands you can't afford to untap, and that sets you back even further, so it's a really vicious cycle, I think.
It definitely benefits them too, because they'll take the shock damage off every single one, because if they don't win by turn four, they're dead anyway.
Or they don't even need to. I mean,
yeah, but it's just like
red. Yeah.
I played against Jund aggro, the really resilient aggro blitzish deck, and she shocked all four turns.
Yeah.
She just took the damage because it didn't matter, because after she puts her Hellrider down, like if she doesn't win by then, it's not happening. Like, just against any deck.
Yeah.
So, it definitely benefits them, and it's kind of rough. But it is punishing people for playing greedy mana bases.
Yeah.
So, I will say that, but yeah. It's really frustrating when you play, and you're playing the best. Man, you're playing so damn good that night. Like, you're hot. You don't miss a single play. You see every interaction. You don't miss a trigger. And then you go against that guy. It's like, champion, burning tree. Oh, I got another one. Burning tree. Oh, I can play this boar now too. And then you just like get your face beat in by Dirtle Bro Pro over here, and it's just so disheartening.
It's kind of like that with Bant Hexproof. You know, it's like, okay, so turn two guys, maybe turn three, and then it's Ethereal Armor, Spectral Flight, Unflinching Courage, Call of the Day, and I'm just like, what? And I have the tools to deal with it. Like, I was a Jund mid-range player for a while, and I still kind of am. And I have the Lilianas. I can board in, you know, the Devour Flesh. I can hope for a Miracle Bonfire, but it's just so freaking fast. And you're like, you know, okay, I'll just watch. That's fine. Like,
yeah, I finally got to use my barter in Bloods last Friday, because I went against the one Bant guy that plays. Mm-hmm. And I was like, barter in Blood, because he had the double strike, two-drop guy, and a Geist with, like, six fucking things on it, and I was, like, down to four, because I took it all off in one damn swing, and I was like, barter in Blood, and he goes, what? He had to read it. I was like, oh, we got a reader!
And that's the great thing about Bant Hexproof, is they put all of their eggs in that one basket, so they will either take that Voice of Resurgence, they will take that Geist, they will throw every enchantment they've drawn on it, and they don't have a plan. They have no way to refuel, and I've been playing the Golgari Rock deck lately, which has been a lot of fun, which packs a lot of removal, and I was able to do that. It was turn four, Mutilate, dead. Then, and he had put three enchantments on that thing, so you know, I think it was Mutilate. No, it was Mutilate, Geist, no enchantments. So he was hoping Geist would do everything for him. Then he brought something else out, put all the enchantments on that. It was his lone creature. Liliana that sacrificed it. Mind you, it was a voice. So he was like, I've got my token. Yeah, I'm tragic slipping that too. So, you know, if you can get them to invest everything.
Still just a 1/1.
Well, still, I mean, if you can get them to invest everything in that one creature, though, and then they literally are top decking, and their top decks aren't that great. So that deck is very easy. If you can survive the initial push, you're home free.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
So Reanimator is still a big deal, except people are now finding ways to – we talked about evolution earlier in the show. Reanimator is now four-color Reanimator, or it's BWR Reanimator, which I think it's just gotten to the point of obnoxious. We need to just stop this. Like, I'm so over Reanimator. I don't even think it counts as Reanimator anymore. How do you do against Reanimator? How do you feel about this?
Which version?
Pick one.
My roughest would be against acidic slime because I ramp. So if you hurt my lands, then that, you know, that's awful. I mean, I run 24 lands, 4 Abbots and Pilgrims, and 4 Farseeks, but sometimes it's just not enough. With that, and especially with Resto Angel, it just it gets out of hand really quick.
It does seem like people are using that plan less, though, I'm seeing.
Less slime. It has been pushed out, at least in my meta, and it, also at some of the SCG tournaments, which I'm fine with. I like the America. I think the America has a really good matchup against it. But the four color is really not that bad. I went against one that was, I guess it did well at a tournament. It had the Boros Reckoners in it.
Ugh.
And the Blasphemous Act and the Angel of Serenity, Thrag Tusk. I think that was like the gist of the deck. It may have ran Olivia. I don't really remember.
The one I think it did. Yeah.
I don't think it did. I don't know. So that's like Jund with Reanimator, or you go Reanimator with white, or Reanimator with red. And I guess there's so many ways to build it, I guess. But and against that, America is like really good, but I run Sever to hit those big creatures, and then I have Putrefies and Abrupt Decays to get the small ones in the early turns, but if I can Sever the Angel of Serenity, I've usually won.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they get a turn 4, as long as I'm not land screwed, I'm usually fine. It's more dependent on my lands than anything. And my two Obsidat does work against them, too. Because they like to... After their first initial reanimation, if you get rid of that, sometimes they don't have anything for a while. A lot of times they don't have anything for a while.
Yeah, see, me being a Jund person, I was on the Ground Seal plan. And that was fine, but the problem is they were coming prepared for it, where they were either Abrupt Decaying, they were Acidic Sliming it, and I feel like just those angles are not good anymore. Going back to the Golgari Rock deck, the Golgari Rock deck runs 3 Cremates. And Cremates is fucking fun. Especially when they don't see it coming, because people forget that they have to target the card first that they're reanimating, and then you can respond to it. So I was getting people that would, target Angel Serenity, Angel Serenity's out of exile, that. And I'd be like,
I hate people
no,
that do that.
You're targeting what? And they'd be like, I'm targeting that. Oh, I'm gonna cremate that. And just to see the look on their faces, they're like, that's a good feeling. And I honestly feel like cards like that are, you know, a good thing against them, because they're so prepared for everything otherwise, and that's what's made the deck so good for a while, but they're not prepared for that instant exile where it's like, what do you got, you know?
Yeah, cards like Cremate and, like, I think Memory's Journey is the blue one that I used with Bant. You can target 3 things and shuffle it back into the library.
You could even use, like, Beckon Apparition if you had to, or, like, a Vile Rebirth and get a 2/2 zombie. I mean, they all do the same thing.
Yeah, the only, like, disheartening thing about those cards is that they take up a spot in your hand, and sometimes it can hurt the synergy of your deck. By you may have to take out a good card to put in this a very narrow card, and something like Ground Seal, why it's was being played or still is, I'm not sure how popular it is now.
Yeah.
But it replaces itself, and that's one of the biggest things. Yeah, yeah. Well, Cremate does have. I forgot it said draw card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I'm for that one, then, for sure. Being able to, because, I mean, if you just need to draw a card, just, like, exile your Temple Garden. I don't care. Like, I need to draw a card. I need to draw an answer. Or if you draw 2, you can cycle 1. So.
Right.
That's good.
So the next big thing, and that everybody seems to be playing, that I personally have had a lot of experience against, is the Aristocrats. Has come
Which
out
one?
Of left field. Either or, actually. It does seem like junk is the new thing, but even the original one is still pretty popular. I was facing it a lot at the WMCQ PTQ weekend that I was at. Almost every third deck was Aristocrats. It was pretty gross. What are your thoughts on this?
I think the Jung one is a one-trick pony that just had its one weekend. Brad Nelson, in my opinion, just makes these brews. And they do, and they win on surprise factor, and then people playtest them and find out they're crap.
I also think that it wouldn't be nearly as popular without voice. But the problem is people are putting voice in anything and then saying that the whole deck is good. Like, people have been doing that with Ban Hexproof, where they're like, Ban Hexproof is so strong. It has Voice of Resurgence. And it's like, well, no. It's like, you know, if you didn't put Voice of Resurgence, you could put Voice of Resurgence in any deck and make it good, essentially. I don't think that necessarily means that the deck is good.
Yeah, mono red splash Voice of Resurgence.
Yeah.
It's the new thing. It's the new thing.
That's really all it takes.
I mean, everyone's definitely trying to do that. But
yeah.
I do think there's more strength in the Dragonfire colors, the red, white, black. And I think it was designed better and more... It works with itself. It has more synergy than the junk one does, in my opinion. But I still don't think the deck is powerful enough. Like, I don't think it hits hard enough.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm running from the bias of my deck. I've been playing this same, almost the same 75, 60 since Ravnica came out. Mm-hmm. I've been playing a little bit with America Control, which is awesome. But against me, it's just not powerful enough. I would assume against some of the aggro decks, if you can remove their early stuff, you're good, but isn't that every deck? Like, if you can just remove their early dudes?
Well, the main complaints I've heard about Aristocrats is that it has the synergies can really hurt you if you aren't aware of them, and it really can come down to it seems to have a lot of... It seems to be... Misplays are a common problem with that deck, I've heard.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not easy to pilot. It's also very easy to get, because all the creatures essentially that make up the deck are little creatures. And if you don't get anything to have those little creatures do big things, you're just stuck with a handful of little creatures. So that's a problem as well. I've also heard situations where people have sideboarded Outland in Aristocrats. I've never really heard of that before. The idea that a deck would want to do that is kind of strange. There's just things about the deck where it's not for everybody. I do agree with you. I like the Borzov version a bit more. I think the junk one's a bit too flash in the pan flavor of the week. But I respect the deck. I would totally play it if I had the mana base for it. I don't have the lands yet. But again, I think it's a little tricky to pilot. And if you can get it all going, it's very scary.
Did you play when Delver was dominant?
Sadly, yes.
I will gladly go on the record saying that I think it has that that testing ability as Delver did, because if you couldn't play Delver, you lost with it. It's you have to play the deck perfect. It's that it's not always the decision. There's sometimes you think you'll make the right decision and find out later that you didn't. And there's not a lot of decks in Standard, because it's so creature-heavy, that actually do that.
Right.
So every single move, every trigger, every response counts in Delver, and I think in this Sam Black's Aristocrats.
Yeah. There's also so many ways to win, too, where it's like, you know, okay, so they're either on the Boros Reckoner Blasphemous Act plan, or they're on the Skursdag High Priest plan, or they're on the Sack Everything to a Blood Artist plan. I mean, there's so many ways they can get you.
Yeah, or Aristocrat plan, or Obsidat plan.
Yeah.
Some are running Obsidat now.
I think that's another really scary thing about the deck, is when you know, I've played, you know, round one or match one, they may play you one way. And you're like, okay, I've got this. I'm going to sideboard. I'm gonna play around this. And then they get you the other way. And you didn't think of that. And that's a really scary thing about the deck.
It's definitely very hard to sideboard against. I will say that. But because of that reason, there's sometimes you're like, this is really good for, oh, wait, that's only two of their win cons. But
yeah.
A lot of times I'll side in, like, extra Abrupt Decays and stuff, because that gets rid of the Blood Artist and the Reckoner.
Curse of Death's Gold is popular if you play black.
Yeah. I do have those. I have not tried them.
Yeah, they're very popular against it.
I'm looking to pull out the Barter and Bloods. Hopefully the Bant is completely dead to where I can put... I've thought of that and Tragic Slip also as a possibility in my sideboard, because I sacrifice and trade so often.
Yeah. So we're not out of the woods in terms of control. Control is slowly... I think Control is going to come back. I don't think we've heard absolutely. Less of it. I think the environment is ripe for it. It seems like the most common decks right now for Control right now is UWR Flash, which I told people was going to be a problem. I told people, and people were like, oh, Aaron, it's just you. And no, between the Turn and Burns and the Aetherlings and all that fuckery, it's a problem. I worry about this deck. It seems like it's going to be a thing. We have some people, Bant Flash is still a thing. People are doing the Advent of the Worm, Snapcaster deal. No, not a fan?
Nah.
Oh.
It's not as good as America. Mm-hmm. America.
Yeah.
But,
America.
Or French, according to where you're at. That's fine, too.
Damn French. And Esper Control, actually. I did play Esper Control twice over the last weekend that I played at. And if things keep going the way they are, I know when I was watching the Pro Tour Dragon's Maze, I think Esper Control is going to be the one deck that will lose the least when rotation happens. Like, I know Jund's going to completely fall apart unless there's some good things that come out.
Yeah.
Aristocrats, everything's going to cycle out pretty much. Maybe Junk Aristocrats could survive rotation. But I really feel like seeing some of the Esper Control builds that people were playing at the Pro Tour, it could still be business as usual. And if that's the case, I would totally play it. But that's just me. But I worry about Esper. I worry about Esper Control. I worry about Flash. I think we have not heard the last of Control. Would you agree with that?
I will agree with that. We are also losing Undying Creatures, which does make Supreme Verdict a lot better. And though we are losing Terminus, which was the best thing to deal with it, a Doge effect it should get better in Standard, because there's a lot of points during Standard where, like, a Doge just didn't do anything. But I'm so happy of the results that I've had with Turn and Burn. It's ridiculous. And
fuck that card.
It's so good. And I hate it too, because it hits my Angel of Serenity, it hits my Obsidat, it hits my
Thrag Tusk. Don't get a beast anymore.
Yeah, it hits a lot of things, and I can get wrecked by it for sure. I'm also a huge fan of War Leader's Helix. Like, I'm running four in mine and being very happy with it. I really like that card. There was a Sphinx's Revelation, of course. Like, the card's ridiculous. If there wasn't Sphinx's Revelation, I actually think Grixis would have a shot at doing well.
I like Grixis. Grixis has been doing things online. I know Mr. Vegabool for Gathering Magic has been posting some Grixis lists, and I like Grixis, but the thing is, if I'm going to play Grixis, I want to play Grixis. Like, I want Niv-Mizzet, I want Olivia, I want four Snapcasters. That's Grixis to me.
I have a Niv-Mizzet in my America build.
Nice. A lot of the Grixis decks that I've been seeing, there's Grixis spells, but then it's just like four Snapcasters, one Aetherling. And I'm like, no, that is not Grixis. Like, do not give me that bullshit.
Make a bolus.
Yeah.
Obsidat's aid.
Bolus ends games, man. I actually played a Grixis guy at the WMCQ. Lot of respect for him, and he did manage to get Bolus out. And you can't come back from Bolus. You just can't. Like, if you haven't done anything in 8 turns to stop him getting out or just to cement your position, just scoop.
Well, if he lands and you get to untap, like, it's over, because that's going to be the only time that they're going to tap out.
Yeah. So it's a very scary deck, but I foresee Control coming back. And I'm a little worried by people that don't feel the same.
Yeah, Grixis also gets Far and Away and Turn and Burn in the same deck.
Ugh. Far and Away I hadn't experienced until this past weekend, and that was mighty annoying.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Bounce your Advent of the Worm token and sack your dude. Sorry, you lost your Smiter and your 5/5 Trampler with my little bitty spell.
Yep. Although the good news is, I know Snapcasters, when they try to give that flashback, they can only choose one half. That's a little nice. So,
yeah. But it's fine. That's a lot of options. That means you have, you know, if you have one of each in your yard, you have four spells instead of, you know, more options. So I like that.
So the deck that I'm worried about is my baby. I've been a Jund girl for a couple months now, and I am worried about Jund. I seem to be the only one who is. Everybody else seems very confident, and it's Jund, it's fine. And I don't think it's fine. People have noticed that it's gone down a little bit in terms of results. There does seem to be a disconnect there in terms of people are playing Jund more, but they're not necessarily doing well with it more. And I feel like it's one of the only decks that's having that problem. And I don't know if it comes down to variance or if it comes down to bad piloting. Why do you think Jund may not be doing so hot lately?
Gosh. It's a hard question for me to answer because I wasn't a fan of it in the beginning with. And I know this is not the person to say that to. Because I feel like if you could punch me through the microphone, you probably could. Or you probably would. But I just don't think the deck's that strong. Bonfire, I just don't think is a good card. I'd rather play Mizzium Mortars 100 times over Bonfire. So I'm against that. I don't think Huntmaster is worth even touching for the Jund that run it. Because it doesn't even trade with anything anymore. Unless you trade both Huntmaster and the Wolf Token for, like, a Smiter.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't trade with an Advent and a Worm. Like, it just doesn't do anything. It doesn't do what it used to be able to do in,
well,
like,
even the
Delver area.
Even when it transforms, it's like, you know, the ability to do 2 damage to a creature used to be a big deal. Yeah, but now nothing. It's like, you know, you're doing 2 damage to a Thrag Tusk. You're doing 2 damage to a Reckoner, which is then bounced back to something you have. Or 2 damage to a Smiter. Or 2 damage. It's not... Yeah, I felt that way, too.
Well, the asses of creatures have got bigger for sure, so yeah. It makes him super weak. And he just is gain 2, chump block 2 creatures is all he is for 4 mana.
Yeah.
Olivia is awesome, but everyone should know you keep a removal spell for an Olivia.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest threat in the deck, if they get to untap with Olivia and take, you know, even just 1 Thrag Tusk or something, then they're usually way, way ahead. But if you don't let that happen, I feel like it's fine. Of course, I did get, at SCG Nashville, I did get Bonfired in game 2 when I had Lethal on board. Mm-hmm. So there's those bitter feelings, but I still think the card is more bad. It's bad more than it is good, if that makes... I don't know another way to say that, but...
I get it, yeah.
It's usually... It's more of a bad card than it is a good card. There are those moments that, like... You feel really good and you piss them off for the next 3 days. But, I mean, most of the time you're going to have it in your opening hand and you're going to draw it with, like, 3 mana and they're going to have a smiter or something at it. And you're going to be like, well, shit, this sucks. It's dead in my hand for the rest of the game.
The problem I think I have with Jund is that the deck is really good at playing the top deck game. The problem is when you're not winning that top deck game, you don't have a way to refuel. You know, like you said, a lot of the creatures don't necessarily have the same value anymore, where there was a time where getting a 4/4 Huntmaster was a really big deal. There was a time where playing the flipping game was a big deal with that. There was a time where you could land an Olivia and people weren't ready for it and people would worry about it. And those times, I feel, are not the same anymore. People are prepared for these threats. And I also feel like Jund is one of the few decks that hasn't changed very much. A lot of other decks have been very good about evolving to meet the needs of the metagame. And the only way that Jund has really evolved, the creatures haven't really changed that much. We had a little bit of Sire of Insanity there for a while, but
yeah.
Really the only evolution that Jund has been experiencing is in terms of removal spells or in terms of the sideboard. The meat of the deck is still the same, and I think that's part of the problem. Is that it's still very old hat, and because it hasn't changed, and everybody else has, they are ready for it now.
Dragon Maze didn't really give it a lot. I mean, Sire was worth testing-ish, but it really didn't give it a lot.
Yeah, and Putrefy wasn't that fabulous, and it needs something. And the problem is that I don't know what it is, and I don't think other people do either. I know one of our people on Legit, he wrote a post, and he was like, Zertod Druid is the way, and I'm like, I don't think Zertod Druid is our savior. Like, we need to not do that. And
I want
to
play against that guy.
So, I mean, I commend the innovation, and I think the innovation needs to happen, but I just think what people are using in their innovation is not the way to go. Like, for a while there, it was Thundermaw Hellkite. It's just like, no, and, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but I know that what I'm seeing is not it. So I have gone down the Golgari control deck. I've been having a lot of fun with it. Disciple of Bolas, a Desecration Demon, is hot. Especially when you get them to sacrifice to the demon and then play your Disciple.
Yeah, I so get 7 like, now.
Yeah, so you'll be like, you know, combat phase, and then they will sacrifice it, and you're like, oh, okay, I have a 7/7 tap demon. This is terrible. Disciple of Bolas. And then you gain your seven, draw your seven, and it's fun. And Giralf's Messenger, yes. And removal for days, a good sideboard. It's fun. It's probably the most fun I've had playing these last couple months. And I also happen to be doing well with it. And I think I'm going to play it at some events that I'm going to this week. There's a possibility I may be going to the SCG Open in Philly next weekend. And I think I would play it at that too. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I almost put a demon in just to troll people. But my double black on four is kind of rough. I mean, I do cast Obsidat, but on four, I didn't want to risk it. But yeah, I run a more consistent Thrag Test path, but it would be really fun to do that to people for sure. Because, I mean, that's a ridiculously powerful creature, but there'd just be so much fun. And then just, I don't want to get hit with six. I'll sack this dude. And just drawing seven would be ridiculous. But
if you can get the Desecration Demon out, it can really end the games fast. Where, like, I remember swinging with it, and I would look at the life total and be like, really? You're that low already? And I didn't mean that to be, like, condescending.
Yeah.
It's literally like, okay. Like, you forget how six damage in the air, not anything, they can't stop it. That can end things quickly. Especially if you're also doing the messenger thing and then all that nonsense. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And
oh, you're in the messengers in it too?
Yes. Nice. Yes. And yeah. Mutilate is a great card. I think Mutilate is one of the best removal spells. I don't care what anyone says. I get a little bit aroused when I use it. Mutilate makes me feel happy.
So how many lands do you have that don't feed the Mutilate? Are there, like, woodland cemeteries?
I run four woodland cemeteries, four overgrown tombs, and then two Golgari guild gates. So it's not hard to get a mutilate for enough. And even then, though, if you have a demon out and you can still mutilate for less than that, kill everything they have, or the opposite. I've had really late games where I've had mutilates big enough to kill an angel. I mean, it can be a pretty great card. So.
Yeah, so you're only losing six sources, which isn't too bad at all.
No,
and then sometimes, like, if you have a demon out, and you may not want to play an actual swamp and mutilate and save your guy. Mm-hmm. That seems good.
Yeah, there's so many ways you can play mutilate to your benefit. It doesn't have to be, you know, as encompassing or as terrible as people think it is.
Yeah, mutilate has a lot more synergy with demon than, like, Thrag Tusk would.
Can mutilate your Thrag Tusk and get a beast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you can also just let your demon survive.
Yeah.
Also, like,
that's true too.
But I don't know how you do against aggressive matches. The life gain helps me a bunch, because I can gain it quite quickly and get easily back up to like 30 life, and then I can kind of do whatever I want. Do you have any? What's your strategy against, like, these blitz decks? Just get to mutilate?
Well, I make sure that I have enough removal spells to get me to a mutilate. So I run Abrupt Decays, I run Victim of Night. I definitely last long enough to get to a mutilate, and there have been times where I've lived long enough to get to a Thrag Tusk, and I've been able to stabilize that way. I have not had a problem with the aggro decks, actually, and that's part of the reason that I wanted to play the deck, because my local meta was very aggro-heavy. So I knew that having oodles of removal like that would take me home.
You've been a big fan of Victim of Night?
I love Victim of Night. The only deck it's really not good against is Jund.
Yeah.
Other than that, it kills anything. And then Elbzadat, yes. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, you'll kind of upgrade to Doomblade here soon, so you should be fine if you get to keep the deck alive.
Love Doomblade. I was very happy to see that was reprinted. I'm very much a black girl at heart, so I love all the removal, and I love... there's just certain things you don't worry about when you play black. Like, I know Boros Reckoner. You know,
you're an Oreo? Well,
I am black and white and red all over. But no, I remember even when Boros Reckoner first came out, there was that, what are we going to do? And I'm like, Victim of Night? Like,
Abrupt Decay?
Like, what are we worried about here? And yeah, it didn't have the same impact on me as it did other people.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You just don't go in combat with him. That's pretty much it. But like, every single removal spell hits him.
Yeah, basically.
Like, everything. And sometimes you have to spirit or something and take damage, but like, every single playable removal spell hits Boros Reckoner. So not a big deal.
So the last thing I wanted to ask you, Mr. Whitehead, is one of our famous pro players, Mr. Patrick Chapin, had made a comment on Twitter yesterday that I found very interesting. And he was talking about how people who had been to Grand Prix Providence and had done well there were boasting about the fact that they were top eight players. Like, hey, I was top eight at GP Providence. And he basically said that if you are somebody doing that, that you are living a lie. You're basically living a lie. What do you think about that? Like, do you think that when you're in a format that's team-based like that, that you should be able to say that you top eighted something, or do you feel that it doesn't count?
I think it absolutely counts. 100%, but in a different way. There's definitely a different level of play when you play as a team and when you play as solo. So at the same time, I can understand him being, I mean, he's always spoke his mind. Mm-hmm. And he's a solo player, like, it, you know, that's what he makes his living off of. So he knows the effort and the time and everything that you have to put in to winning all by yourself. It's all on your own your own mindset, your own composure. And I can understand how he thinks that, you know, you have all this help now, and it could be just one smart guy playing the other two guys' decks or whatever. But, I mean, all three players were playing, and even if you put three minds together, it's still, I think it's still commendable. There's still a lot of people out there, and I think your match matters just as much as it would a one-on-one. You have to think of it that way. You can't think, well, I can lose and then my other guys can win. You just can't do that. You're not. I don't think anybody that made that top eight thought that, or they wouldn't have got that far. You know, you have to have the same drive and the same mentality when you play. But yeah, you get kind of a benefit. You get to build decks with friends, and you get to say, hey, you know, I think he has this, or you know, when you played him, you know, did he have anything? You know, you can. But I think that just kind of adds a little extra element, and it's another level that you have to think on, or a different level that you have to think on. Not necessarily to say that the level's above what you normally play on. It's just to the side. I think it's a unique experience and a cool tournament. I don't think anything should be taken away of anyone that top eighted, but that's just me.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, there have been times where I like Two-Headed Giant a lot. I've never done the team trios or trios or whatever they call the three-man format or three-person format. So, but I can, there have been times when I've played Two-Headed Giant, right? I would be in that GP so hard, let me tell you.
My threesome goes against your threesome. We just rub neck beards and go on with our lives. Whoever passes out first loses. That should be a tournament.
Although if it was a team of gingers, though, our sex would be, like, blinding. I'd just be like, ah, the whiteness.
I'd just take off my shirt, and everyone would just bow. They'd think an angel just popped down and blinded by the light.
But I've played Two-Headed Giant before, and I understand that there are times where you don't plan it that way, but sometimes you do end up being what I call the limpy gazelle, where, you know, you're not necessarily the stronger head. You know, you've got the deck with more of the leftovers, or you're just sort of the one who's clearing the way while the other person turns the card sideways. I understand that sometimes those things happen, but a lot of times, at least that I've found, it's not intentional. And I think it's a little, like I said, I think it's a little not cool to say that. I personally don't like taking wins away from anybody if I can possibly help it, because where I come from, I haven't even come close to that. I would kill to be in the double digits of an event. You know, I would kill to be in the top 50% of an event. That's success to me right now, where I'm coming from. So if somebody can get that high, I can't say that they didn't do anything to make that happen, or that they didn't contribute anything to that. So I would let them have it. You made top eight. Yes, you did. And I will not take that from you. And I don't know. I don't like it when people look for reasons to take things away from people. Like, there was that controversy a little while ago about the girl who had won her state's event. And it was, oh, well, her boyfriend scooped to her. Well, that doesn't mean that she didn't earn the matches going up to that. You know, I don't know why we just can't be happy for people. Why does it have to be you didn't earn it, or you didn't work hard enough? Who's to say what that, you know, what that meter is, or that expectation is? Or I don't like that. I think that's something we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And another thing, I guess it's kind of a side note, but I think we should stop separating females and when they do well. Like, I think, like, we talk about, like, girls should be treated the same. I know this is probably, I'm opening a huge can of worms, but they should be treated the same, and they should, but, like, it's cool that we've had some big articles about how well women have been doing in tournaments, but I think we should just treat them like a normal person. Like, they don't need to be separated out. Like, I don't honestly think that article really, like, it was her personal article. I mean, people don't have the right to do it, but I don't think there should be that much focus just because she's a girl. It should just be another player.
Well, but, and
it's so hard for me to...
I mean, I agree with you to a point, because the bottom line is that if... And it's actually funny you mentioned that, because guys scoop to guys all the time. They scoop to their guys, they scoop to their buddies, their brothers, their best men, and nobody makes a big deal out of it. But the fact that she scooped to her boyfriend was a huge epic deal. And I think that that conversation wouldn't have happened if it had been you. Like, let's say you were playing one of your old co-hosts, and you were like, dude, that guy was on a show with ages ago, you know, and I haven't seen him in years, and he was across the table from me, and we just did it. We just drew or whatever. No one would have said a word about that. It would be, dude, you know, guys are bonded, they're bros, yeah. If one of you had been a woman, though, I feel it would have been a whole other story. But, and that's where I think there was a problem.
Yeah, well, people just gave it that extra light because it was gender-based.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, just treat them like a normal person, and it's cool. It's the same. But, yeah, another thing, the community is not used to this. They're not used to a guy scooping to a girl, or a guy and a girl playing each other, more or less. Yeah. Like, there's some people that it still
or
blows their mind.
Like each other.
Yeah, it's just because they don't talk to girls doesn't mean that, like, there's not girls playing the game. Like, I know there's some just people in the community that just don't, they still can't fathom that females play the game. But, like, you just need to get used to it. It's good for the game. You need to encourage them to play. Like, it doesn't need to just be that Magic player guy's girlfriend that's playing. It's I hope it gets to the point where it's just like, yeah, Sally Jane's playing. She's really good. And she's single or whatever. You know, like, she's not there because, you know, her boyfriend got her into it or whatever. She just... I hope girls can get to the point where they're just like, hey, I just want to play this game. Seems cool.
Yeah.
Not, you know, they don't walk in and there's dudes like, you're a girl, you can't play. It's stupid, it's immature, it's preschool, but sometimes that's our community.
Sally Jane?
I don't know, the first thing that fucking popped in my head. I didn't want to use, like, an ex-girlfriend's name. That would have been awkward for the rest of my life.
That would have been awesome. That would have been great. I could have gotten more listens out of that.
Sally Jane? Or people just, like, Google one of my ex-girlfriend's names and, like, stalker, and I don't know. Junior boy plays a card game and slings cardboard at people and talks about it for 5 hours a week. Oh, that'd
so
be awful.
Houston, if anybody has enjoyed listening to you on my show, where can they find you? Where can they find your show? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, we are on MTG Cast. Mm-hmm. That's no problem to get to. You can also jump on OasisGamesSLC.com. Or we are there as well. You can jump in there and get 5% off singles, putting in Tap and Sack as your promo codes. So that's pretty cool. They're running there, working pretty well with us. You can hit my blog, tnsgingerale.com. I'll give you up-to-date stuff on me. I'll write stuff about my personal life, hopefully coming soon. I have a philosophy entry that may go in soon, because I've been saturating it with Magic content, but I'm looking to hopefully get on some sort of website to start writing articles, so the blog may change in a little bit more personal way. But you can also hit me up on Twitter at @TNSGingerAle, and you can hit my email, just houston.whitehead@gmail, or you can go to the Tap and Sack one, tapandsack@gmail. Lots
awesome.
Of good stuff. Easy to get a hold of me. Absolutely easy to get a hold of me. If you have any questions, or you want to talk about anything Magic or personal or anything like that, you're more than welcome to hit me up.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was certainly lovely getting to know you, and I've had a lot of fun having another ginger on the show. It feels really good.
It was a blast. I feel extra good about being the first ginger. That's pretty awesome. I'm excited for this I hope that I don't hurt your show. They're like, and, God, two gingers, that's just too much. I can't listen to this shit anymore. Like,
I have to put on suntan lotion just listening to this. That's going to be the feedback that I get, you know?
I just added a donate button on my blog, just if people enjoy the work, they can donate. And, like, above it, it says, buy me sunscreen. I don't know if that's, like, really bad advertising. I thought it would be funny to make it funny, but I don't know. Some people could be put off by it, but I don't know. Only they can take a joke.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Houston.
No problem. It's great.
And if anybody's enjoyed what they've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can, of course, find the show first and foremost on legitmtg.com. You can also find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to pick up the show and leave me a positive review while you're at it. If you have any feedback for me, you can always find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. And you can also email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and behave yourselves, okay? Bye. I'm a humble boy, but we can't do how to control that.